Hey, Jennifer.
My name is Jennifer Francis. I'm from the Kaktuishtehalf First Nation in Saskatchewan.
I'm McFavel. I'm from the Kwakwatoose First Nation. We're both from Treaty 4 territory in Saskatchewan.
And we're both graduates of the Indigenous Communication Arts Program at the First Nations University of Canada, or INCA.
INCA is a diploma program that trains students for careers in journalism and communication,
including how to produce and host a podcast. Did you know that young people are downloading podcasts more than music?
I did not know that, but that explains the popularity of Home on the Res. It's heard on 6 Indigenous radio networks across Canada, 366 First Nations communities. The good people at Finbola hired us to produce Home on the Res. All of our podcasts from all 3 seasons are available on the Finbola website at fnnboa.ca.
That's right. In this episode, we're going to learn about housing and disabilities.
Our Home on the Res reporter and producer, Lori Dietz, talked with Neil Belanger. Neil is the CEO of British Columbia Aboriginal Network on Disability Society, BCANS.
BCANS has won awards for its work with Indigenous people in BC.
And Lori found out that they actually work with people across Canada.
Neil Belanger is Métis and an adopted member of the Gitxsan First Nation. Here's his conversation with our Home on the Res reporter and producer, Lori Dietz.
Hi, Lori. My name is Neil Belanger, and I'm the Executive Director of the British Columbia Aboriginal Network on Disability Society. We are an organization based in Victoria, British Columbia, but we provide disability-related services across Canada. If you have a need, and it's a legitimate need, and there's something that you know you require, we'll take a look and see what we can find. And then we work with other organizations, provincial and federal governments, we work with communities, we work with Métis Nation, we know whatever we can to find the resources and assistance that it needs. So, you know, it expands the whole gamut. So it's not just one thing. We removed all expectations of limitations or mandate because too many organizations do that. And we often get, families or individuals calling us that we help. They said, you're the first ones that listened to us. Everybody else said they couldn't do anything. And what we say to our team here is, you know, don't say no. You know, let's find it. If we can't find it, let's see if we can create it. Because if we don't try, it's always going to be a no.
How is disability defined? And is it different how it's just defined in general and how it's defined in the Indigenous culture?
I think it all depends upon which nation or group you're talking to within the Indigenous side. It has a lot to do individually who you're talking to and how they perceive themselves. So we get both sides. We have the Western side looking at it more as a limitation. And we have more of the Indigenous side looking at it as part of the membership of the community. This is who we are, and this is how we support each other, you know, whatever our abilities are. Persons who live with disabilities, they don't identify the disability as a limitation necessarily, but they look at the systems that they are forced to operate in as a limitation, right? So, and that's a problem that we have both within Indigenous communities and non-Indigenous communities, that we've created systems that make it difficult for persons who live with the disabilities to thrive and to be included members of their community and to be able to participate equally.
Is there information or data on the number of Indigenous people who have a disability?
No. Statistics Canada does not collect information on disability from First Nations communities. They said that in Canada, you know, without including First Nations communities, 22% of the population have a disability. But we know that it's higher within our community, within the Indigenous sector, because of, you know, the multiple barriers and factors that influence from remoteness, you know, access to healthy foods, you know, transportation, you know, going on the land, all those things that can contribute to disability. You know. So it depends where you are and it depends what you're seeking.
How would you compare Indigenous communities understanding the challenges associated with persons with disabilities compared to off-reserve in urban centers?
I think it goes, you know, again, it's community by community, whether or not you have that disability lens or really looking for it, right? We talk about the accessible problems that we have in many communities, right? Accessibility problems, and they've been there for some time, you know, and people adapt to it. They learn to live with it, and all of a sudden, it's no longer necessarily seen as a difficulty, but as just a part of our life here within our community, and that's a bad thing when it becomes so common and dealing with this gap and nothing's being done about it, then it becomes, you know, just part of everyday life. That's not a good thing, right? So under the provincial side, they have more municipal and provincial regulations that they have to adhere to, and probably more vocal. With the community side, again, if you only have, you know, two or three people in the community that live with a disability, communities often try to adapt for that by themselves. Like I said, if there's stairs, carrying up the person up the stairs, all those type of things here. And they see that as an effective measure, when really it's not. It's not an effective measure. We have to plan for disability.
In regards to housing, if someone comes and says either I have a disability and I have no housing, or I have inadequate housing, what can you do for them?
So we have to understand the person, we have to understand the family, we have to understand what's their Indigenous ancestry and their affiliation, where they're living. Are they living in their own community? You know, all these things. Are they living provincial, territorial, whatever there is jurisdiction? So we have to understand that. So we get a comprehensive understanding of them, any supports that they're on or accessing right now, any assistance, that type of thing. We go from there. So if it was somebody within a First Nations community, you know, we take a look. We, you know, want to know if they own the house, if they're living in social housing. Do they have their certificate of possession? You know, all those background things that we need to know. Work with the band. We talk to them to see if they have supports that you know, depending upon what they need. We take a look at the WRAP program. We look at the emergency repair program. I mean, it all depends, right? Depends who they are. But at the end of the day, if there's no opportunities, we'd start hitting up private funders. So it all depends on the person, all depends upon the needs, all depends on the capacity and willingness of the community or the organization or their affiliation. We're usually pretty successful. There are some times that we're not, of course, but usually, you know, if we keep looking and keep pounding the doors, we get other ideas. We talk to other organizations that are non-Indigenous to see if they have funding resources. So it all depends. If it's somebody who is under Jordan's principle, we'll talk to them. Right? We'll talk to Jordan and say, hey, is there opportunities here? We have a status First Nation youth here, and it's, you know, living in this house, it's dangerous. You know, and all the things that are factors. So what we do is really based upon what we know.
What are some of the physical barriers for people with disabilities living in their homes?
I think accessibility isn't always forefront on your mind unless you're already living with a disability, right? People tend to forget that we get older and our accessibility needs change, and that those 13 stairs that you might have leading to your house is going to become a barrier at some point, right? So we were at one point worked on a national project for visible housing so that we have no step entry, wide hallways, and a washroom on the main floor. That would allow people to age in their own home without having to go. Because what happens when someone becomes an elder and they become infirm, unless the nation has the resources to build something different, they have to leave their community. And we're dealing with accessibility issues within the community, which means, you know, often lack of paved roads, lack of sidewalks, you know, somebody using a wheelchair, you know, suddenly you're stuck in your house because the community itself is inaccessible, right? What we suggested was, and we actually worked with the FN on this and some communities here on the island, is say, you know, the housing policy has to incorporate that. And anything that you build, you should take that accessibility lens, right? Because knowing that we're all going to get old, and knowing that everybody has different needs, and it doesn't only benefit persons with disabilities, it benefits, you know, elders, it benefits, you know, new families that have kids that they're hauling up all the groceries and 16 strollers and everything else in the world that, you know, new parents have to deal with. So making homes as accessible as possible is a priority. And accessibility, if you don't have somebody championing it in the community, it's often not on people's radar. So it's one of those systems that, again, we create rather than making a universal design for everyone, you know, regardless of whether you live with a disability or not. It's often lack that forethought.
Is there a universal design that works for everyone in regards to housing, do you think?
I think there's some good plans out there. So I think visible housing, with the concept of it, as long as you get contractors on there and leadership on there, accessible housing is great. But if you can't get to the band office or the community hall to participate in your community because there is no paved roads, because there is no sidewalk, because the incline is too high, you got an accessible house that you're inaccessible to your community. They go hand in hand. So you have to have both. The expectation that we should have for everyone is that you can get from point A to point B. If you have dirt roads, if you have sidewalks, when you're walking on the side of a bank, when you have a river on this side, or a forest over here and there's a drop off, it really inhibits that person's ability to be part of the community or be part of where they live. And if you're not part of your community and you're not there, that's going to increase your social isolation. It's going to increase your health and disability condition. I mean, everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to contribute. Everybody wants to be a part of it. So everything that you do, you must take a disability lens into. What we find is we're often very reactive than proactive. We'll deal with it when it becomes a problem that we can't deal with anymore. You know? And that's not the way to go. We have to be more proactive in planning everything that we do. That's programs and services, and that's everything. And we have to involve the membership living with a disability in those planning aspects and get their input, because we can't assume that we know everything.
You had mentioned that you will help people nationally throughout Canada, but are there other organizations like yours in other provinces that you know of?
There's none. We're the only organization of our type in Canada. Right now, we're working with the federal government to expand our services across Canada. And the programs that we developed have been recognized nationally as, you know, best practice. So we want to bring that across Canada as well.
Suggestions or last thoughts on what people can do to ensure that homes are built to accommodate people with disabilities?
Well, and that's the thing. It comes from leadership, right? And so whatever we do, doesn't matter where you are, or what community you're in, if you're living within a First Nations community or a provincial jurisdiction or territory. As a sector, we need to be more vocal. And as a communities, we need to be more vocal as well. We need champions, and we need to understand that everybody is affected by disabilities. At some point in your life, whether you have one or not, you're going to have a family member or a friend who's going to live with a disability. And so we have to plan appropriately. Making homes as accessible as possible is a priority. But again, if it doesn't connect with an accessible community, it just becomes an accessible house in an inaccessible environment. And that's no good. So we have to look at the whole thing.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Neil.
Thanks, Lori. You take care of yourself.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Terrible.
Oh no, are you sick?
I feel terrible because I never thought about any of the things Neil was talking about. I feel like a jerk.
Me too, but that's the point. When you listen to people like Neil, you start to develop that disability lens he described.
I guess that's true, but I still feel like a jerk.
My other takeaway is we need to listen to people with disabilities because they really know what's going on.
You know what else I realized?
What?
It's entirely possible that I'm going to have a disability before I die.
That's right. It's hard to think of that when we're young and fit, but we are going to get old.
So doing something about this now is really preparing for our own futures.
I want to be able to go anywhere in my community and participate and contribute when I'm an elder.
So as Indigenous people, we need to do this. We need to look after our elders and everyone who wants to participate and contribute to our communities, even if they have a disability.
I'm jazzed. I think I'm going to go out and build a ramp.
I'm not that handy, but I am going to talk to my chief about what we can do to make our community accessible for everyone.
Me too. Right after I build a ramp.
You're awesome, Mick.
Aw, thanks, Jen. I think Home on the Res is awesome. Every show opens my eyes and teaches me something new.
And if people want to hear more, they can. It is totally accessible.
You can find all 18 episodes of Home on the Res on the FNBOA website at fnnboa.ca.
We want to say thanks to FNBOA's Executive Director, Keith Miracle,
and the board members of FNBOA,
and John Kudrowski, for giving us this opportunity to learn about housing and share what we learned on Home on the Res.
Shannon Avison wrote the scripts, and reporter-producer Lori Dietz did all of the interviews.
Lori also directed us when we recorded our scripts,
which is why we sound so professional and so brilliant.
It's great working with you, Mick. Stay safe.
You too. And everyone out there listening, stay safe and look after each other.
Bye for now.